All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation. Unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, here he is now. Hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense from the shores of Lake Wissota, where, yes, it's another beautiful day up north. It's Tuesday, May 23rd. Nice to have you along. It's 53 degrees here on the lake, 51 in Wausau, 54 in Oshkosh, 46 degrees in Waukesha, starting off our 6 a.m. hour on this Tuesday. A busy show this morning. First, we'll have some lessons from North Carolina. We're going to visit with a reporter in a few minutes from our sister outlet, the Cardinal and Pine, a Courier newsroom outlet in North Carolina, a state with recent experience that only reaffirms how every Wisconsin election matters every time. It took only one state Supreme Court election over there and one legislator switching parties out of personal spite to turn North Carolina women into second-class citizens when it comes to health care. So that's coming up in less than 10 minutes. Then at the bottom of the hour, Christina Laurie, my Up North News colleague, will be here with the Uplift, three of the more uplifting stories that she covers in our daily newsletter that comes to your way by email every morning around 5 a.m. And then a very busy 7 o'clock hour. I have guests for most of the hour, and all three of them are related to a book that I've talked about several times by Ruth Conniff called Milked, How an American Crisis Brought Together Midwestern Dairy Farmers and Mexican Workers. And so we will talk to farmer John Rosno. We'll talk to Mercedes Falk, who helps Mexican laborers navigate language and work and cultural barriers when they come to Wisconsin. And of course, Ruth Conniff herself will be joining us. That's all coming up about an hour from now and take up a good chunk of our second hour before we talk to Chad Holmes from Bull Falls Radio before we wrap up the show today. And he has a special guest this afternoon, Senator Tammy Baldwin, passing through the Wausau area. We told you yesterday how the senator is making a tour around Wisconsin talking about veterans' health care, the things that she's done to improve veterans' health care, and frankly, the things that House Republicans have already voted to slash for veterans' health care for this debt ceiling, economic hostage taking that is still ongoing between House Republicans and President Biden. Along the way, if you have questions or comments about what we're doing, studio line is always open for you at 844-967-2789. Keep that number in mind for Brewers tickets as well, not for today, but for tomorrow. And it's going to be a little bit different tomorrow. A lot of times we give away two tickets. Tomorrow, Wednesday, we're going to give away four tickets for Friday night's game. So that way you've got a couple of days. You know, so if tomorrow morning on Wednesday, if you're thinking you can get to Milwaukee on a Friday evening, watch a Brewers game, bring three buddies or three family members, whatever the case will be, tomorrow we're giving away four tickets for Friday night's game. So keep that in mind and keep the studio line handy at 844-967-2789. Aaron Zommers is in our Madison studio, where I learned something really important, Aaron, this morning while getting ready for work, and I heard a familiar noise outside in the backyard, and I realized there's yet another benefit of you and I having these ungodly early hours with the alarm clock, is when the crows all decide to start yapping at once, it doesn't wake us up, because we're already awake. We're up before the crows start yammering, you know?
I don't know, like, it's more pleasant to be awake already, but also then you can hear that happening and be like, oh God, I'm already awake.
Well, there is that. That's a reminder of, yeah, normal people are still sleeping right now. But I am sure that a couple of my neighbors, you know, around 5:30 did what I've done in the past, is you hear them and you just want to go, shut up. But I didn't have to, because, you know, we're already
That's
here.
True.
So the NFL draft is coming to Green Bay. We learned yesterday afternoon that Green Bay and Lambeau Field will be the site of the 2025 NFL draft. So a couple of years from now. So Aaron, the question has to be asked, major economic boon to the northeastern Wisconsin economy or late spring blizzard shuts it all down? Where do you put your money?
You know, given that we're in Wisconsin, I think I'm going to have to go for the latter. Like, it would be nice if that weren't the case, but I'm not going to get my hopes up.
No, and I think that just everybody needs to be prepared for it. It's much like when the Super Bowl came to the Twin Cities now many years back. It turned out to be a success. You know, they built a huge ice castle. It was everybody, you know, had nice things to say about it. But again, knowing full well a blizzard could have shut it all down at any time. And it doesn't have to be, you know, a blizzard for the Super Bowl or the draft or whatever the case may be. I remember the Super Bowl was in New York once, and it was just like a cold rain the whole day for the days before that. So hopefully weather is not a factor when the NFL draft comes to Green Bay.
Fingers crossed.
All right, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed. All right, I got a quick sec for we're going to do sports early here since we're going to have Michael McElroy coming up right after the break. And there's really not that much to say about the Brewers. I think it was 8-1 when I finally turned it off. In the end, the Houston Astros pounded the Brewers 12-2. For the Astros, it was their eighth straight win. Corbin Burnes allowed 4 home runs in a game for the first time ever in his career. The 2021 Cy Young Award winner hadn't given up at least 3 homers in a game since 2019. And then once Burnes departed, Houston just feasted on the Milwaukee bullpen, including a grand slam in, I think, the eighth inning. Eric Lauer went on the 15-day injured list with a right shoulder problem. You know, the injured list where our other pitchers, Brandon Woodruff, Wade Miley, and Aaron Ashby, have been. And Luis Urias, the infielder, is just now starting a rehab assignment. Colin Ray starts for the walking wounded of the Brewers tonight. Michael McElroy from North Carolina is going to be with us next to talk about things happening there that could be harbingers of our future in Wisconsin. That's next. You're up north.
In my mind, I'm
we're going to get to North Carolina news in just a minute with Michael McElroy, and I'm going to ask him about South Carolina Senator Tim Scott, but I'm just going to editorialize for a minute before we bring in Michael, because I was listening to some of what Senator Scott said yesterday in launching what could charitably be called a long shot bid for the Republican presidential nomination, offering, as the Associated Press put it, an optimistic and compassionate message that he hopes can serve as a contrast with the political combativeness that has dominated the early Republican field. The Senate's only Black Republican, Scott kicked off the campaign in his hometown of North Charleston. And he had a lot to say about, you know, his grandfather who had to leave school early to pick cotton and, you know, got to watch him, his grandson, be elected to Congress. But then there was a whole lot said about, you know, as Republicans like to say, you know, what the entitlement mentality or whatever you want to call it. And I would just offer up to Senator Scott that, you know, the things that benefited you compared to your grandfather, they didn't just happen. It isn't just because, quote unquote, America is great. It's because some great and very brave Americans took actions to create that ladder that you were able to climb. And may I suggest not pushing it away? Senator Scott, in my view, has already been an impediment to police reform, as Republicans conveniently use him to block actions that could actually improve relations between police and some of their communities. And those are things that Senator Scott is going to have to answer for. So a nice flowery speech on the front end of things. But if he wants to stay in this race, he has questions to answer and can't simply be, you know, the nice guy in the field. So that's South Carolina. Let's head to North Carolina now, where my colleague Michael McElroy from the Cardinal and Pine, political correspondent there, joins us to talk about what's happening in that neighboring state. Michael, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. And of course, thanks for having me. I'm thrilled to be here. I love Wisconsin.
Do you have history with Wisconsin, or are you just liking us from afar?
I love its vibe. I have never been there, and I hope that doesn't hurt me with your listeners, but I love Wisconsin.
Hear that, folks? We got a vibe. We got a vibe, and it's not just cheese and beer. A big part of it is cheese and beer and brats and Packers and things, but we've got a vibe here. Michael, the stories that we see out of North Carolina, those of us who follow political news closely, it's very telling, and it is a reminder for those of us in Wisconsin why the recent state Supreme Court race was fought, you know, with such vigor. And then watching what's happening in North Carolina, where there is now a new abortion ban in place. There's continues to be a gerrymandering issue with the maps, and it really just hinges on state Supreme Court choices and a single legislator. So in laying out the groundwork for all of this, let's tell folks who haven't been following it recently about the most recent events, and that would be an abortion ban. To take us how it was able to pass, how you have a Democratic governor like Wisconsin who was able to veto it, but unlike Tony Evers here, your governor faces what is now a super majority of Republicans, right?
That's right. It was a super majority that came about not from an election, but from a defection from one member who left the Democratic Party for the Republican Party in April, or early April. Trisha Cotham, who I'm not sure if your folks know or heard that name. It's certainly the biggest name and only name in politics that's been mentioned in North Carolina. So she left the Democratic Party in early April, like I said. But what sparked that a week before, there was the first successful override of a veto by Governor Roy Cooper. And Trisha Cotham, who was a Democrat at the time, missed that vote. And this was a bill that would have taken away a state requirement for a background check to buy a handgun. And she missed that vote along with two other Democrats, and they're missing that override vote helped the legislature override the veto. And she and those other two Democrats kind of caught a lot of flack for missing that vote. Then a week later, she announced that she was switching parties and then gave Republicans a supermajority. At that time, it was known that abortion was going to be the biggest issue that was going to have an effect on. Last week, they passed a 12-week abortion ban. Governor Roy Cooper did veto that bill, and the Republican legislature was able to override that veto, they overrode it with the narrow margin that if only one Republican had broken ranks, meaning if Trisha Cotham had broken ranks, that veto would have been upheld. So it really did come down to one vote was all the difference between that abortion ban and not.
So I guess up until now, as you explained it, I wondered if it was still some kind of a mystery why this Trisha Cotham decided to, what personal slight was involved here. And so now to go back to the first veto override on gun legislation, and she and a couple of others missed that vote. And of course, you always wonder, and I know as a former legislator, there's sometimes you have to tell a colleague, basically, go take a walk. We can't have you in the chamber for this reason or that reason, or other people do stay away. So do we look now at that gun bill as a sign that maybe she wasn't as Democratic minded as people had been led to believe? Or is it really a case that she missed that vote for non-political reasons, and then just got her feathers so ruffled about getting grief about it that she went against all of her previously stated principles to become a Republican?
Well, there is an answer to some of that, and there's not an answer, at least known to others. So that this gun bill was another veto override vote. She was present for the actual vote on the bill, and she voted against the bill. So she missed the veto override, and she has had long COVID and has missed several votes because of treatment for long COVID. She had told leadership that she might not be able to make it on that day. She shared text messages with the Democratic leadership saying she was really going to try and make it. So at least on that bill, she had just weeks before shown that she was against the bill. She just missed the vote. But the big thing is, like, changing party wasn't as big as a shift from her changing her position on abortion specifically. She ran she won election in 2022 on a platform that was very strongly abortion rights and protecting abortion rights. She had been a member of the House before. She was first elected in 2008. She left in 2016 to run for Congress. She lost a Democratic primary against a well-established Democrat here. And then she came back. And her first run for office, she gave an impassioned speech about abortion rights on the House floor. This was back when they were passing a 72-hour waiting period. So she had been a fierce advocate for abortion rights before she ran on it. She spoke just in the election in 2022 of, you know, requiring leaders with an unwavering and unapologetic defense of abortion rights. So that was the really big shift. And it's why she's gotten so much outrage from Charlotte, which is Mecklenburg County, which is what she represents, which is Charlotte. I mean, that's why folks feel like it's a betrayal, because it was a completely different take on how she ran.
Oh, gosh. I mean, without a doubt, that's certainly what has provided, you know, national attention for this. But again, coming back to the state Supreme Court, where we had this close race for a single seat, the Supreme Court there has had its own political drama over time, right?
Well, it's far less drama and more just a show of the consequences of elections. just last year, it was a 4-3 Democrat, and now it's 5-2 Republican. There were two seats open last election, and the Republican candidates, I mean, it was relatively close, but they still won kind of, you know, every percentage point is a lot. And so I think they won by 2 percentage points, each candidate. And then they went about and completely reversed rulings that the previous court had just handed down last year, and on some really big issues on gerrymandering and on a voter ID law. And the essential argument from the new court was that the Supreme Court really had no authority to get involved on elections issues and drawing the maps and these voter IDs. And abortion hasn't come up yet to the Supreme Court, but there's just no doubt that if this bill is challenged in court, it would be upheld by this Republican-led Supreme Court.
It's interesting that you've seen this shift, because, again, unlike congressional and legislative seats, you can't gerrymander a state. You know, statewide elections are what they are. And so you have a Democrat who was elected statewide as governor, but the state Supreme Court races have been another matter, apparently.
Yeah, North Carolina is weird. I mean, every state is weird, but North Carolina is weird because in the statewide elections, they have a history of voting for a Republican presidential candidate and a Democratic governor. And so the same voters who elected Governor Roy Cooper also voted for Trump over Biden, also voted for Trump over Clinton. So, and these are the same ones who voted Cooper in. And Cooper won by bigger margins over his opponent than Trump won over Biden. But these are the same voters do it. And so it's a little strange in that sense. But yeah, even Ted Budd, though, which is obviously a statewide election, Senator Ted Budd beat Sherry Beasley, his Democratic opponent, kind of handedly. And it was expected to be close, but it was not as close as it was expected to be. So it is a purple state for sure in the electorate, but this is a purple state that does in statewide elections still tilt toward conservative side.
And one final note on the 12-week ban. It's not just Trisha Cotham, but there were a couple of Republicans as well who basically went back on their word or past pledges or promises, right?
Yeah, there are several who had at least hinted that they would protect abortion rights, or at least the current ban, which was at 20 weeks before it became 12. The only real, I think the biggest Republican who could have, you know, voted against the bill was Ted Davis Jr., near Wilmington. And he was pretty strong about keeping things the way they were. He said he had talked to a lot of, this is during the election, he said that he had talked to a lot of voters who had said, keep it at 20, keep it at 20, and that was his intent.
And yet, intent, we've learned, unfortunately, once again, things reinforce the cynicism about politics, unfortunately. Michael McElroy from Cardinal and Pine, I've done run out of time. I got to have you back to ask about Tim Scott and other Carolina matters sometime soon. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Pat.
All right. Have a great day. When we come back, Christina Lurie has the uplift. Uplifting stories from the Up North News Daily Newsletter next. You're up north. Now on Up North News Radio, and it's time for the uplift when Christina Lurie, our newsletter editor, shares with us some of the stories you could and should be seeing either in our newsletter or on social media over at Up North News WI. Search for it there. Sign up for the newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. Christina, how are you?
Good. How are you, Pat?
Very good. Thank you. We're going to start this time around with some of the safe cities that are out there. And I say this as a city kid, you're a city kid as well, that, you know, cities are sometimes getting a bad rap, especially from people who don't spend a lot of time there. And the fact of the matter is that there are, some are better than others, and some of the safest, best places to live are right here in Wisconsin.
And safety is a lot about how you feel too. So I never want to discredit people when they think that when they feel unsafe, because that's all justified. But again, it's a good time to remember that Wisconsin overall is a really excellent place to live. We're the 13th safest state in America. And this comes from a girl who was raised just outside of Chicago, which is one of the least safe places in the country. So that's a welcome change. And it's always nice to just remember that we live in the 13th safest state in the country. Mm-hmm. And in Wisconsin itself, so every city overall is generally very safe, but the 10 absolute safest, number one is Oconomowoc, number two is Evansville, three is Grand Rapids, four is the town of Geneva, and five is the town of
Mukwonago.
Okay. It always, there's always so many extra letters. And I was
yes.
But we compiled a whole list. So the FBI, they released they used crime data to score every city in the country that had a population of more than 2,500 people. So your city is likely on the list, or just, you know, the nearest biggest city. If you live in a tiny town, like my uncle lives in Soldiers Grove, Wisconsin, I think it has a population of about 90 people.
This is all good news, and it's all, again, not surprising to most of us that we have many safe communities, and frankly, for other places, you just use some common sense about, you know, where you are and at what time of day, and you're in great shape. But again, Oconomowoc, you're going to be in a good spot there.
And hey, at least I nailed the pronunciation of that one. That got me thinking, what is the hardest to pronounce town? In your opinion, in Wisconsin?
Oh, well, I'll tell you, as a UW Eau Claire alum at the college radio station and at the college TV station at the time, we would always make sure, and it had to happen with me coming over from Minnesota, is you basically have to drill that into people. It's like a lot of other things, you just have to memorize it. So you'd get somebody who has said Oconomowoc, for example, or they would say Lac Court Orioles, and we'd pull them aside and say, no, that's Le Coup d'Orée. And thank goodness for these college journalism instructors that help those of us who are new to an area get on the straight and narrow. And you have to do that with every TV market. I still laugh at somebody at channel one of the channels up in Eau Claire talking about Wabasha, Minnesota as Wabasha, you know, as they're giving a severe storm update. It's the Midwest. We're not going to have generic names. What can I tell you? You know.
When I worked in TV, we actually used to refer to this site mispronunciation a lot, and they would actually read you the town name so that you could, you know, internalize it. Because some things, when they come up in a prompter, can really throw you off. I remember for me, it was Muscadet, because it looks like Muscoda.
Right.
But then you say it, and I'm like, oh, I never heard that town before. Then I got to a commercial break, and the meteorologist looks at me and is like, was that on purpose? I'm like, no. Just ignorance.
Nope, just a new newscaster. You see it in just about every market that's out there. The next story that we're going to talk about is about Ukraine candles, and it involved a game show, and it now involves other ways where their proceeds are going to good use?
Yes. So the Door County Candle Company, we've referenced them multiple times here because they're just such a philanthropy-based company. So they're all the way up in Door County, but they also offer shipping. So don't change a channel now just if you think you don't live by them. But they first gained notoriety because they released that Ukraine candle where they donated all of the proceeds to an organization that is on the ground in Ukraine helping refugees. We don't talk about this enough. This war has been going on there for about a year and a half now. And these are just innocent civilians that have completely had their entire lives uprooted. So now, in addition to not only raising money for Ukraine, Door County is expanding its reach. They're offering a Poland thank you candle because that's one of the countries that's taking in many of these refugees. They're also offering a powerful candle, which raises money for Girls Inc. If you want to kind of keep your donations a little bit more local, that helps young girls within our own state. And then they also offer several gift box options. So I know Mother's Day has come and gone, but there's, you know, candles always make a great gift when you're not sure what to give someone. And then it has that extra 1-2 punch that you're giving something where all of the proceeds benefit a nonprofit that can use it. So $10 from the candles only cost you $14.95, and 10 of those dollars go directly to charity. The other $4.95 are just production costs. The company is not making any money off of this itself.
That's excellent. And one more story, and it deals with one of those many holidays we have throughout the course of the year. So why wouldn't we have one for wine? And that is definitely the case coming up this week, right?
I thought you were going to tee me up and say, why not, Christina? Well, setting you up.
I'll let you take from here.
Beer gets so much attention here in Wisconsin. Wine does not get that much attention, and it really should, because you might think of California when you think wineries, but Wisconsin has a ton of wineries here too. A fun fact for you that Americans drink more wine than any other country in the world, and it's not even close. Last year, the average American drank more than 3 gallons, which is 48 8-ounce glasses. So the gallon, it does throw you off when you spread 48 out over 365 days in a year. I'd like to say that's reasonable. Sure. What is Wisconsin drinking? We decided to look into that. So can you guess the number one wine here in Wisconsin, Pat?
No.
What's your personal favorite?
I know so little about wine. Okay. Merlot, maybe?
That's close. That was actually in the top five. Okay. Sauvignon Blanc. I'm not big into wine. I'm not even positive that I'm saying.
Let
the words run together. Sauvignon Blanc. a lot of vowels in there. But that's the number one in 16 states, including Wisconsin. Also popular here is Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. I'm not a wine girl either, but I can attest that even if you don't love drinking it, these wineries are absolutely gorgeous places to visit. So if you head to our website, we compiled a whole list of some of the best wineries that offer more than just wine. They show you how it's made. Some of them actually even let you, they have select days a year where you can jump in and stomp grapes with your feet. You can have a little competition with whoever you go with and see who can get the most juice out of your grapes. But some of the best wineries to visit, according to Travel Wisconsin, are Simon Creek Winery up in Sturgeon Bay. There's Trout Springs Winery in Greenleaf. And then Wollersheim, that's my personal favorite. That's just outside Madison in Prairie du Sac. And that has 27 acres of vineyards. And I mean, Wisconsin is actually weather-wise a really good place for grapes to grow. And a lot of people don't realize that. And after you celebrate this Thursday for National Wine Day, if you don't have time to plan an immediate trip to one of these wineries, actually the best time to go is the end of the summer and early fall, because that's when harvest season is here in Wisconsin. So you can plan ahead. You can review our guide that we'll post on our website, and it'll be in our Thursday morning newsletter if you sign up for that as well. And then you can have ample time to plan your trip, because it's really, there's so many to choose from. You'll want to look through and find a winery that best fits what you're looking for.
Christina Lurie. It's Christina Lurie at upnorthnewswi.com is where you send your tips for our newsletter. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too, Pat.
And we should note as well, I think Aaron can vouch for this as well, that first I want to correct the website that she mentioned for pronouncing Wisconsin town and city names. It's mispronouncer.com, not as in mispronouncer, but like the, if it were somebody's name, M-I-S-S, mispronouncer.com, which was started by Jackie Johnson of the Wisconsin Radio Network, who took it upon herself, got like all of us who have been news veterans or media veterans, you get tired of like, how do I say this name? Or you hear somebody else mispronouncing something. And there used to be like an Associated Press style guide or something, Aaron, but now you're reliant on the web, and the web not only can, you know, write it out phonetically, but you can click on it and you can hear how to say, you know, Mukwonago or Oconomowoc or Manitowoc, as the case may be.
Yeah, as long as you go to a reputable website, which mispronouncer is. But I've definitely, I've heard
a reputable
some,
one? Yes.
I've heard some that were just wrong. I can't remember which words, but it was really dumb.
Well, and again, because of the origin of a lot of these names, which are not, you know, because I can hear people going, hey, wait, are you mocking, you know, Native American names? No, a lot of these names are like this mishmash of what somebody thought they heard.
Yep,
as
exactly.
Native American groups. There is a book, I don't have it at my fingertips here, but somebody else has written kind of a book about the origin of Wisconsin place names. And at first I thought it was going to be really interesting. I mean, it is interesting, but what I noticed in place after place after place, it always includes the line, the town's name could be Ojibwe for this. Or it could be, you know, an amalgamation of that. It really was a case of, you know, again, 150, 200 years ago, you know, people heard what they thought they heard, and then they kind of, you know, Americanized it, if you will. And I mean, even the name Wisconsin itself is something that came from a French word, which was an interpretation of a Native American word, an indigenous word. And so it was, here it is. The French version of it was O-U-I-S-C-O-N-S-I-N. And then the French rendering of the name for the Wisconsin River was Meskonsing, M-E-S-K-O-N-S-I-N-G. So thank goodness that Jackie started mispronouncer and some of these other things to keep us, you know, on the straight and narrow. Because you only know what you know. In fact, another area where that works out is in people's names. You know, every day we talk to meteorologist Jennifer Wachitsky. And what people don't know, and I'll put it up on screen for people watching on Facebook, her last name is spelled W-O-J-C-I-C-K-I. And that's Wachitsky, I think. At least a couple of times I've heard her pronounce it, you know, and she had to talk about being, you know, she like I of Polish ancestry, and that when, you know, you're learning to spell and you're realizing your family doesn't, you know, doesn't spell it necessarily the same way other people would. And how many weeks did I call you Zomers before you corrected me on Zomers, for goodness sakes?
It was a couple at least. I don't know.
Which was when, what's the ancestry or derivation of Zomers? Is it German or?
It is Latvian and German.
Latvian.
Or see? Latvian. I don't even know how you're supposed to say that, because I've heard people from there say it both ways.
Say, what's the other
Latvia
alternate?
Or Latvia.
Oh, see? I got told all the time that we were pronouncing what was it now, we were pronouncing something wrong, and I took issue with it because I said, well, just because that's how they say it over there, it doesn't mean it's how it's said here. For example, do any of us refer to Paris, France? No, you know, it's Paris. So the whole English language is funny, and honestly, as a journalist and as a word nerd, I honestly don't know how people, our children included, how they learn English. You know, I learned it. I loved it. I'm a total geek when it comes to words. But the more I think about the different ways to spell things and how, I mean, vowels don't matter. You can spell the word fish, G-H-O-T-I, because the G-H can be an F sound, like at the end of tough and rough. And how many times does the letter O actually make a short I sound? And then T-I would be from T-I-O-N, you know, which is pronounced shun.
Oh, gosh. So,
again, go easy on your kids. Have them keep memorizing, because memorization is really the only way to get this done. So we've had more than a little fun now at Christina's expense for working on Mukwonago. But again, in pointing out that she does this newsletter of all these wonderfully safe cities, National Wine Day, and so many other good things about living in Wisconsin. All right, we'll do our history lesson and music break next. You're up north. This, of course, would be the Everly Brothers. Here he comes, that's Kathy's clown. And in preparing this segment, Aaron, late yesterday, after doing that, after wrapping up my workday here, I went outside. We had to cut down some dead brush, and we went ahead and stuck it in the burn pit. And somewhere along the line, don't you ever realize, like, I was midway through this task, had been going on for an hour, and you realize that some song is stuck on a loop in your head. And I cannot tell you how many times Kathy's Clown kept playing in my head last night as I'm going through. I'm finally like, what? Stop it. And, you know, you have to come up with some other song to stop the earworm. So remember that in case Kathy's Clown is spinning in any of your heads earlier today. That would be Phil and Don, who had the top spot on this day in 1960. But here's the interesting bit of history about it. Not only was it number one in the U.S. on this day in 1960, it was number one in the U.K., which doesn't sound like a big deal to us, but it had never happened before until this song by the Everly Brothers held the top spot simultaneously in both countries. Off to birthdays now. Joan Collins, the actress, is 90 years old today. Ramon Tickey Fullwood, who had been the drummer for Parliament Funkadelic, was born this day in 1944, passed away in 1979. Drew Carey is 65 years old today. Phil Selway, drummer for Radiohead, is 56. The singer Jewel is 49. And soul singer-songwriter Steve Lacy is 25 years old today. On this day in 1969, The Who released their rock opera album, Tommy, about a deaf, dumb, and blind kid who sure plays a mean pinball. From Soho down to Brighton, I must have played them all. But I ain't seen nothing like him in any amusement hall. That deaf, dumb, and blind kid sure plays a mean pinball. From the history books on this day in 1960, back to that same day as the Kathy's Clown hit number one, there was a tsunami that happened from an earthquake in Chile, down in South America. That had happened the day before. On this day in 1960, that tsunami reached Hilo, Hawaii, and killed more than 60 people who had no idea, you know, to expect this, tidal wave that was coming at them. I think it was last week that we said that it was on that particular day in 1980 that after the breakup of Wings, Paul McCartney had released a solo album called McCartney 2. And I mentioned at the time that right after the breakup of the Beatles, he put together a solo album called McCartney. In 1970, it topped the album charts on this day in 1970. No singles were released for play on the radio, but Maybe I'm Amazed did eventually become a hit, the live version of it.
Which this is not.
Right, this is the one off the album. And then later he would play it solo in concerts and with Wings, and it took off from there. One could say it got wings. This is the anniversary of the birth of Dr. Robert Moog. I said that right. I'm always tempted to say Moog, but it's Moog. Engineer and inventor of the Moog synthesizer. Maybe not the first person to create an electronic instrument, but definitely revolutionized them, making synthesizers reliable, portable, financially accessible. He had passed away in 2005. I don't even know what qualifies as a synthesizer anymore. I mean, is basically, is any electronic keyboard the same as a synthesizer? Is it no longer like a trade name of a particular type?
Not always. It depends on whether or not the keyboard is just playing back the sound or making the sound. Like if it just has a bank of samples, like this is the A on the piano and it plays that back, it's a sampler or a rompler, which means you can't add more sounds to it. But if it has an algorithm for creating the sound waves, then it's a synthesizer.
Okay. I'm still trying to process all that, but
sorry.
Okay.
I don't know a better way to say it necessarily.
And that is, had to be one of those folks that like to play with like the theremin, which doesn't have a keyboard at all, but you just kind of wave your hand and you get different sounds from it. Isn't music amazing? This day in 1979, Sister Sledge was certified platinum for their biggest hit. Which I cannot hear without thinking of Willie Stargell and the Pittsburgh Pirates taking this on as their anthem on their way to the World Series. The number one album on this day in 1992 was by Chris Cross, Totally Crossed Out. Jordan Sparks won season 6 of American Idol on this day in 2007. And then finally, on this day in 2006, the Chicks, formerly the Dixie Chicks, released their 7th album, Taking the Long Way, the big hit off there, Not Ready to Make Nice. A lot of accolades for the album, but again, their time as a tour de force on the charts had come to an end, a premature end, because they had the audacity to criticize President George W. Bush and the war in Iraq. And at the time, of course, it was considered this breach of decorum to criticize a president while you were overseas. We can see now decorum is often just a convenient excuse when you want to criticize somebody or better yet, criticize their criticism of you. But the Chicks went on to make more albums, and they have done other music projects, but have not nearly had the successful release of singles as they did over and over and over again in the 90s and the early 2000s. A reminder that this time tomorrow, we will be giving away Milwaukee Brewers tickets, 4 of them, for Friday night's game against the San Francisco Giants, which means, again, Aaron, no pressure on you, but we're going to need to come up with a trivia question. And not just any trivia question. It's one where if we ask it at about 6:55 or so, when we're all done with all the music and the history news, that we get a caller and an answer by 6:59. So it can't be too easy, but it can't be too hard. And it doesn't have to be a Brewers trivia question. It could be a Wisconsin trivia question. And because there's so many other things that I'm just going to put this all on you.
Okay. I'll figure something out.
So there you go. It's going to be all Aaron 1 hour from now. All right. Let me tell you what's coming up next year. I'm really looking forward to what we're doing in the next hour here. And it comes back to the book Milked by Ruth Conniff. And she talked to several farmers across Wisconsin, John Rousno being one of them, and we're going to talk to him in the next hour. She talked to Mercedes Falk and others who have worked with Mexican laborers on Wisconsin dairy farms, and talked all about what are the stakes here, and when are we going to fix this broken immigration system so that there can be some stability for Wisconsin dairy farmers and the people working so hard on them. That's in our next hour. You're up north.